Teresa Tomeo.
We're live from Royal Caribbean's Freedom of the Seas for our very first marriage cruise, joined by Greg and Julie Alexander of the Alexander House. We'll also get the inside word from Doug Keck and hear from our Bible lady, Gail Buckley, on a Monday.
Catholic Connection, weekday mornings at 8 a.m. on 990 WDEO.
Radio for Catholic and other Christians. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
My next guest is Tom Quiner. Tom and his wife Karen live in Des Moines, Iowa. They are the founders of Breakthrough Marketing. They write, design, and build websites, including that for Iowans for Life, email campaigns, and print materials. More importantly, Tom is a self-described, and by that I mean real, evangelist for his faith, a husband, father to three grown children, and now a granddad. Along the way, embraced the pro-life movement as the most important issue of the day, which led him to create a blog called QuinersDiner.com. That's very cute. And after 4 years, he has posted over 2,000 blog posts, most having to do with the pro-life cause and, of course, political problems associated with that. But Tom's deepest passion is his faith-based music. That is, he's a composer. Tom Quiner has composed 3 mass settings. He's set over 100 psalms to music and written 8 musical theater pieces, one of which we're going to talk about specifically today. His newest theater piece is entitled The Wedding at Cana, and is scheduled to be performed in dinner theater format in churches around Des Moines in 2015. Tom Quiner, welcome to Church and Culture.
Thanks, Deal. It's a pleasure to be on your show. Thanks for having me.
Well, why did you choose dinner theater rather than just traditional theatrical presentation?
It's a great question. As you mentioned in the introduction, I've written a number of pieces that have been performed over the last dozen years or so. Typically, those have been performed in the church itself, where we come in on a Saturday night or a Friday night or whatever. But when I was trying to decide what my next musical would be, I got inspired by The Wedding at Cana, and the whole idea of Jesus being at a wedding feast was kind of exciting, and it just made sense to do it as dinner theater, where the guests, that the people coming to this event, are going to feel like they are guests at the wedding at Cana.
Now, is this the first time you've presented any of your musical theater pieces as dinner theater?
Yes, this will be the first time. I've done other events where we've, in my pro-life efforts, last year we did an event at our parish called Three Divas and a Guy, and that was done as dinner
theater. Which you're reprising this year.
Yes, which we're going to bring it back this year, and it's a blast, and we're doing that. It's primarily Broadway songs, kind of like a Las Vegas show,
right?
Clean cut.
Do you have enough talent out there in Des Moines to do this?
Absolutely. Not only do we have enough talent, I believe any community of any size around the country has talent. There's a lot of passion for musical theater in this country, and people like an opportunity to perform. We've got a rich talent pool here in the Des Moines, Iowa area.
Now, do you perform as well as compose?
No, I don't. I'll qualify it this way. I wrote a piece a few years ago called The Guy Agnostico Show, and I made my one and only performance as an actor.
The reviews were that bad, huh?
Yeah, I was a talk show host.
Mm-hmm.
Who is the world's most famous agnostic, and I interviewed famous people from history where we debated God's existence.
Like who?
Went up against St. Thomas Aquinas and
yeah.
People like that.
Really? Did you have, like, C.S. Lewis and other well-known
that
people?
That particular show, I debated Adam and Eve, King David, and St. Thomas Aquinas. And it was kind of like The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, except it was Guy Agnostico interviewing these people. So that was my only time I acted.
Sounds to me like that could be an ongoing show with all kinds of different guests.
Well, in fact, I am developing another one. It's funny you mention it, because of my interest in the pro-life movement, I'm working on a script where Guy Agnostico will interview two famous agnostics, Ayn Rand and Margaret Sanger. Actually, I think they're both atheists. And then Mother Teresa of Calcutta. And I think that could make for a very dynamic show.
So oh, yeah.
I'll probably export to the...
there are still a lot of Randians around, so I'm sure you'll find a lot of interest. I'm talking with my friend, collaborator Tom Kleiner out in Des Moines, Iowa, about his longtime musical apostolate to the church on behalf of all church teachings, but especially the pro-life cause, and about his upcoming and latest musical called The Wedding at Cana. Tom, I read the synopsis, and what struck me is how perfectly the story of the wedding feast in Cana lays out as a theater piece. It's got all the elements of what you want in a theater piece, from crowd scenes, choral scenes, festive scenes, a tender love duet. You've got the humor of the wine running out. You've got the kind of interesting interplay between mother and son. It really does work very well, I think, when being presented in this format.
Well, thank you for saying that. When I was reading through the Wedding at Cana, for the 100th time, we've all heard it so many times. The story itself is it's not a lot there. I mean, obviously there's a ton there, but in terms of coming up with a whole mini musical, I had to develop it a little bit more. And so I used what I call the Narnia twist. You know how the kids in Narnia transported from here and now.
It seems like in every movie I go to right now, people are being transformed to different times, future, past, whatever.
Yeah, and so I just tapped into that idea because people kind of like it. And I start in the here and now with a young couple who are singing Hail Mary to...
Now, they've wandered into a church.
Yeah, so they're in...
They seem in love. Does that mean they're making out in the back of the church?
No. These are good Catholic kids.
Okay, all right. Never do that. Okay.
they are in church, and they are singing Hail Mary, and at the conclusion of singing that song, they announced the second luminous mystery, and at that point, the music changes into something mysterious, and they're mysteriously pulled back into time.
By the way, this is why I think you've created a good theater piece, because you're framing it with that kind of mysterious tinge.
Well, I hope so, and I'll be anxious to see what my director comes up with this, because they'll be drawn back into Cana, and then they discover they're the couple getting married at Cana.
Now, is everybody going to be wearing white robes like you see in illustrations? I mean, how authentic are you going to make this, Tom?
Well, that's being developed right now, and I have a pretty good team. In fact, I got a dynamic team I'm working with on this who will very much influence, hopefully, other performances of this around the country, because I've hired a guy to kind of design a simple transportable set that I can use.
Mm-hmm.
Also advising on costumes. He's been involved with community theater for years. He used to be a window dresser with Saks Fifth Avenue in New York
perfect.
City. So, I mean, this guy is really, really...
Well, I won't even ask you how he got to Des Moines, but that's okay.
He's from Des Moines.
Oh, he came back. He came home.
Went he worked out in New York, you know, for years, and that's a real burnout job. He said he was having to dress, I forget how many windows, something, it was an unbelievable number, 20-some windows every week. And he finally reached a point where he wanted to come back home, and his family's here, so.
Well, that's right next to St. Patrick's Cathedral. That's one of the most prominent corners in New York City, if not the most prominent corner.
Wow, I didn't know that. I mean, I've been out there, but...
It's on Fifth Avenue. It's at the corner. It's literally across the street from St. Patrick's Cathedral. Well, so that is probably the most highest-ranking job of that kind in New York City.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, this guy, that's where he worked, and he got burned out, came back here, and he had been the designer, set designer for the Des Moines Community Playhouse for years, and now he's taking on independent projects, and he's taking on this one. So he's also advising on the costumes, and what he envisions is that we're not going to costume the people from head to toe, except for probably Mary and Jesus. In other words, the audience is going to be kind of in on, you know, the game, so to speak. They're going to watch how people...
Well, I think... that's wonderful. You're going to have a kind of a... You're breaking the fourth wall, as it were.
That's exactly how he turned it. We're breaking the fourth wall.
And by the way, for listeners who don't know what that means, if you just imagine a stage with its three sides, you know, his side and back, the fourth wall is the space that the audience looks through. And breaking the fourth wall means that the actors explicitly acknowledge the fact that there's an audience out there.
Yeah, and in fact, we're going to even go a step further. When the miracle takes place, we run out of wine, and Jesus turns the water into wine, the cast members will be going out at that point and pouring wine to the audience.
Oh, boy. This is going to be a very popular piece. Now, are they also going to experience the running out of the wine and the consternation of not having any more wine and wondering where the next wine is going to come from?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you might help me develop that one, Deal.
Because that, I think, is your real... there's lots of powerful and poignant moments, but you can really do a lot with the running out of wine theme. And then, of course, the mom asking her son, the son, for help, and him saying, Mom, come on, I'm not at work yet. You know, I'm still waiting to get out on the stage. This is not, my time has not yet come. I mean, you can have, that can play really funny if you want it to. And I don't think the least bit irreverent.
Yeah, you know, it's such a dramatic moment in Scripture and in our lives. If you think about what Mary and Jesus are talking about, I'll paraphrase it. It's like Mary almost telling Jesus, time to become who you are, kind of a phrase from St. Catherine of Siena. And you think how someone like St. Catherine of Siena had lived off of Eucharist for like 10 years, as I understand it. It's like this wine. It's like Mary saying, time to get off the pot. It's time to become who you are. We need this wine.
You know, it's my observation that Jesus was always reluctant to do miracles. That is, he didn't want miracles to be the reason that people believed in him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think part of his reluctance was not just that he didn't think it was time for him to start his work, but secondly, because he didn't want to start his work that way because he didn't want to give the impression that he was just a miracle maker.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
But on the other hand, when mom says do it, you do it, right?
Well, especially that mom.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's so dramatic about that is when we read the scripture through the prism of today's language, it's jarring when we hear Jesus say, woman, You know, it calls her woman. And I've heard some translations say dear woman, but we would love to have seen the expression on his face and her face, because it could be done in a number of ways.
I am absolutely sure that's not like John Wayne, you know, talking to Maureen O'Hara.
I don't think so.
No, it's not that at all.
And your older or your younger listeners probably don't even know who Maureen O'Hara is.
Well, they need to learn.
I know. She was a beauty.
So I'm talking with Tom Quiner from Des Moines, Iowa. He is a marketing guy with his wife. They have a company there called Breakthrough Marketing. But he's also been a composer for a long time. This will be your ninth theater piece that you've written. Is that correct?
Yeah, something like that.
And it's called The Wedding at Cana. It's going to be performed first near Valentine's Day in 2015. And you've done that, I guess, for multiple reasons. But one reason also is because the book, the best-selling book, which is also Notorious, 50 Shades of Grey, the film of that book, is going to open around the same time. Is that correct?
Yes, that's what I heard, that they evidently the trailer is showing for that movie, and it was like the most watched trailer of any movie in history or something like that. And I saw, of course, they're bringing it out on Valentine's Day. For those who don't know what the book is, and they probably do, you know, it's basically mainstreaming softcore porn to women. And so I'm hoping that our little musical, The Wedding at Cana, will be important, powerful counter-programming in our local market area.
And by the way, those of you in Iowa who are listening will want to know that it's set up to be performed at All Saints, Christ the King, St. Francis of Assisi, and St. Pius. But Tom is also hopeful, and this is part of the reason we're doing this show, that other parishes around the country might want to produce and perform this play. Tom, how would that work?
I'm developing everything that a diocese or a parish will need to perform this production themselves using their own local talent pool. That includes, obviously, the music. But even more than that, I'm going to launch a Kickstarter campaign at the end of September, right after the big Christ Our Life Catholic Conference that'll be in Des Moines, Iowa in September. I'm hoping to raise enough money, and I'm fairly certain that I will, to produce a very high-quality, controlled video with a cinematic look to it of this performance. That'll be provided to any church that wants to do this around the country, along with director's notes, so they'll see exactly how they can stage this themselves. I'll give them sketches for any set designs that we use. They'll get the music, karaoke track, and they'll get all the marketing that they need, including a poster that we designed, tickets, and flyers. We just want to make it, I hate to characterize it this way, deal, but it would be like a musical in a box. They'll be able to unpack the box and have everything to do this show, except they need to provide their own.
Well, I mean, don't apologize for it, because when a Broadway show goes on the road, it essentially does the same thing, except for using local talent. I mean, they'll get another team of actors and actresses and go on the road, but everything comes in the truck and is put out on the stage.
Well, you're exactly right. What I've discovered, having been involved with these projects over, the last, I guess it's even more than a dozen years, because I think my first piece was done about 15 years ago, which was an operetta, I have gotten to know in my area here, so Des Moines, Iowa, which is the greater metro area, is about 350,000 people. I've gotten to know some of the best people in town. I try to connect with the musicians and the singers in the choirs throughout the community and find out who's interested in these types of things. And we, get the best of them to be in the solo parts. I've got a whole community of people that I'm connected with here who are wonderful people. They've become my friends.
Tom, I seem to recall some fairly famous opera singers coming from Iowa. Am I right about that?
Well, yes. I mean, one of the most famous would be Simon Estes.
Right. The great Porgy. Porgy and Bess.
I've met him. In fact, he had quite an impact on my life in some respects.
Well, tell us that story, because his recording of Porgy and Bess for Phillips maybe 25 years ago has remained my favorite Porgy and Bess that I've ever heard.
Well, I met Simon Estes. He's probably in his early 70s now.
Yeah.
Just a speaking voice is incredible.
Oh, he's good. He sounds like our friend who does all the commercials, the famous actor who was in Field of Dreams.
Oh, yeah, James Earl Jones.
Yeah, he sounds like James Earl Jones.
Yeah, he does. Well, here's my story with him. Simon Estes gave money to a school in Cape Town, South Africa, out in one of the townships, as they call them there. Very poor township. And they named the school after Simon Estes. He gave them money to send 40 of their students over to Des Moines, Iowa.
Well, that's a lot of money.
School year. Well, A whole school year.
Wow.
And we housed two of them. And one of the young men is like a family member to us to this day. And that's over 15 years ago.
What a great thing for him to do and for you to do. And
we talked to our young man. I say young man. His name is Samson. He still lives out there. And and he now sings occasionally with the Cape Town Opera Company. But it's not, it looks glamorous. There is no money. I mean, he does not make much money, and he's it's not steady work. But it was Simon Estes who gave these kids this opportunity to come over to the United States for a school year when they were about 18 years of age.
I have a feeling that Simon Estes is a Christian.
Yeah, devout Christian.
Yeah, I don't know why. I think I maybe heard him do a recording of gospel songs at some point. But, you have this larger purpose of evangelization through entertainment, which I think is just so important and is being absolutely, I don't want to say absolutely ignored, because a lot of people, including myself, have gotten their fingers in certain pies and filmmaking and TV production and so forth. And, of course, there's what we would call the gospel music or Christian music movie. But your idea, I think, is even more doable and more, maybe even more effective, because you're not just asking people to come to something. You're asking people to participate in the production and the performance, but also as audience members. I mean, when I grew up going to dinner theater in Fort Worth, Texas. I mean, the best theater in Fort Worth was a theater in the round that was set up as a dinner theater. I saw all my first Broadway musicals in that format. It was intimate. It was fun. You could look into the eyes of the actors. They could look into yours. And as a 13, 14, 15-year-old, I was completely entranced.
Yeah. I mean, you never forget it.
To this day, I still think I'd make the best King Arthur I know. But, that I think that day's passed me by. I'll probably be more like Merlin at this point.
So is that why you wear the old golf clothes?
The plus fours and the knickers?
Yeah, the knickers.
Yeah, there is a link there. I guess it's the fact that it's from last century in the United Kingdom. That's in the right direction to get to Arthur, isn't it?
Maybe you're just proud of your legs.
Now, it's been said I have good legs, but of course I would not ever say that publicly. What is your music like that you compose? Do you have a style? Do you have a type? I assume it's not too complex.
I would call it on the contemporary side using symphonic instruments.
How big is the orchestra you're going to use?
Well, okay, I'm going to be using a karaoke track, which
you're going to lay it. How many are going to be laying down the track?
And that all will be done by computer. So the only live instrument that I'm going to use with the with the recording will be brass. There's one piece which is called Song of Songs, based on the book Song of Songs, which is the love song between the couple. There's a really nice trumpet solo I have in there. But before you get too nervous, Dio, you need to know that the quality of the instruments that I get off of my computer.
Well, I mean, I already know that a lot of film scores are done this way.
I mean, they are, and it's when I've done my previous productions, I never have enough strings. It's finding enough people, affording to do it is not easy. So the strings, the Steinway piano sound, and the woodwinds are incredible. And it's the brass that's never quite as good, so I have to lay that in with real instruments.
I'm talking with Tom.
Karaoke track. So
well, don't call it that. But anyway, I'm talking to Tom Kleiner about his upcoming musical theater piece that's going to be performed at least 4 churches in the Des Moines, Iowa area. He hopes that other parishes and dioceses will take an interest in having his production brought in and everything supplied except for the actors and actresses and director. It is called The Wedding Feast at Cana, and we'll be talking to Tom Kleiner some more after this message. Please stay with us.
Hi, this is Father John Ricardo, inviting you to join me as we explore some of the deepest questions that arise in our hearts, questions that shape the way we think, the way we speak, and the way we live. For all of these questions, Christ is the answer.
On our next Christ is the Answer program, Father John Ricardo continues with the RCIA for Catholics Catechetical Series. He's continuing a sub-series on the sacraments of the Church, and on our next program, he discusses confirmation. Listen to Christ is the Answer, Wednesday evenings at 8, Saturday evenings at 7, and Sunday mornings at 11 on Ave Maria Radio at AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the image of the invisible God. He points us to our destiny. He reveals the dignity of the human person. He is the one who makes known the Father. Christ is the Answer.
Christ is the Answer is brought to you by the Ave Maria Communications Guild.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
What does it take to create a truly joyful family life? It might be easier than you think. Researchers at the University of Illinois found that families who made simple things like family dinners, a game night, family days, family prayer, and even working together on household chores were much happier and more stable than families that spent their time on other activities in their community and school. In fact, the families that made time for these simple rituals were less likely to have kids with school or emotional problems, or deal with promiscuity or drug and alcohol issues, and the parents had happier marriages and greater life satisfaction to boot. If you want to experience your family life as a gift, take time unwrapping that gift by investing in those simple activities of family life that enable you to get to know one another and stay connected to one another. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
I'm back with Tom Kleiner from Des Moines, Iowa. Tom and his wife, Karen, have a marketing company called Breakthrough Marketing, and they do all kinds of work in the area of websites, email campaigns, and print materials. But Tom is a composer. He's composed now 9 musical theater pieces, 3 mass settings. He's set a number of psalms to music. His latest work, Wedding at Cana, going to be performed at in Des Moines, 4 churches next year. Tom, how can people get in touch with you if they're interested in bringing Wedding at Cana to their parish or their diocese?
Start with my email address. Just shoot me an email, and that is tom@bmi-info.com. That's tom@b=i=igloo-info.com. Or they can call me up at my office at 515-276-9266.
Say that again.
515-276-9266.
Or our listeners can just email me at my email address, d.hudson@avemariaradio.net. And we'll be giving out all these contact emails and phone numbers again later in the show. Tom, how are you going to promote this through social media? I know that that's your expertise, and I'm sure you're going to do it. How are you approaching this?
Well, it's a great question. I'm doing a number of things right now, Gil, to kind of expand my reach. I'm actively connecting with people on Twitter who use the word Catholic to describe themselves. And as a side note, I've discovered there is a rich and passionate network of Catholics on Twitter. I mean, I get very excited about my Catholic faith when I see how many people are standing up for their faith on Twitter. So I'm using that to draw people into a Facebook page we have up for the Wedding at Cana musical. And then we will have a website page as well we're going to put up a splash page, which is a way of saying we'll put up a page that will give kind of the overview, but it'll probably be the Facebook page that's going to be driving the narrative on the project on a day-to-day basis. We're putting material up every day, some of it's inspirational, some of it's about interpretations of the Wedding at Cana. We'll be putting up videos of, when I get ready for my crowdfunding campaign. So the
tell people what crowdfunding is. A lot of people don't know what that is.
Okay, well, crowdfunding is a very exciting innovation that has come about on the Internet over the last several years. There's a number of different crowdfunding platforms out there. The two best known are Kickstarter.com or Indiegogo. The basic premise is, let's say I want to raise $15,000 to fund a movie of the Wedding at Cana and to help pay for some costumes and sets. I'll set a goal, I'll create a video, I'll drive people to Kickstarter, and they help to drive people to this website, and people can contribute to the project. Typically, people who do these projects are offering awards if you contribute. For example, if someone contributes, let's say, $30 to my project, then they will receive the DVD when it comes out, even though it'll be several months later. Here's the kicker. If you don't hit your goal, you don't get any money.
Right.
It's like all or nothing. So you can't get greedy and say, I'm going to raise 100 grand, and if you only raise 5 grand, you're out the money. So you want to be realistic on what you think you really need for the project, and it's a way for people to support artistic projects that they believe in. So I'm very excited about
that. Yeah, and let's give out the contact information again. Now, my email is dhudson@avemaria.net, dhudson@avemaria.net. And your email is what, Tom?
tom@bmi-info.com.
And your phone number?
Area code 515-276-9266. And that'll ring into my office at Breakthrough Marketing.
Well, you know, one reason, Tom, I jumped so quickly on your email to me about Wedding at Cana was that I had just come back from Louisville, where I'd had dinner with Archbishop Joseph Kurtz, who is president of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. Just the two of us, just getting to know each other. And in the conversation, as you can imagine, we started talking about the arts, beauty, the role of beauty in music, and so forth. At a certain point, he spoke very passionately about the need for us as Catholics to show the beauty of marriage, to make marriage beautiful again. And when I saw your musical theater piece, I thought, well, that's exactly what Archbishop Kurtz was talking about. And I do plan on, after letting Archbishop know that we did this interview and that it can be heard on the Ave Maria radio network and on a podcast at the website, which will be there for the rest of eternity. So I wanted you to know that you are actually doing something which the head of our bishops here in the United States is very, very interested in supporting and encouraging being done.
Well, that's exciting to hear. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, and I'm going to share this with him so that, and I'll just say, guess what, Archbishop, what we were talking about? Here's my buddy Tom Quiner out in Des Moines doing it. You know, it's funny how, I don't know if this is true in Des Moines, but I live, as you know, near Washington, and I've lived near New York City, and I've lived in the heartland in Atlanta, Georgia, and other places. But oftentimes, people, when it comes to things artistic, they automatically look to the West Coast or the East Coast. And we both know that some of the best music conservatory training in the United States is at places like Indiana and Michigan. And I wouldn't be surprised if it was University of Iowa. It's really the Midwest that produces the great musicians, especially the great brass players and the great singers. Now, they end up going to New York to go to Juilliard or Manhattan School of Music. They may end up in Hollywood to break into films or TV, but they're coming out of the heartland. Isn't that the case?
Absolutely. There is incredible musical talent, I believe, throughout the country. There is a ton of it in the Midwest that is, they're being raised here. Jazz, for example, has there's a lot of passion for jazz here. You know, and there are jazz educators who are exciting kids in music that way, who aren't interested in classics. But by the same token, I am so excited with the kids who are into classical music and opera, coming right out of the schools here in Des Moines, Iowa, and throughout the state of Iowa. So I agree with your premise, Neil. And just to kind of build on what you were saying, there was a saying I heard on Catholic radio a few years ago, and it was something like this: the world will be won by beauty.
Oh, that's, you know who said that? It's Dostoevsky.
Well, yeah. So, you know,
he said that in his
church.
In his novel, The Idiot. And you may recall I've written on that. Beauty will save the world is exactly what Prince Mishkin says in Dostoevsky's novel, The Idiot. And by the way, that's the last thing Archbishop Kurtz said as I walked away from him. He kind of smiled and waved and said, beauty will save the world.
Well, and Pope Benedict said something that really stuck with me. He said the two best ways to evangelize is the lives of the saints and the arts.
Boy, he really got that. And I think that his legacy of encouraging an apostolate of beauty is something that is growing and something that will be one of his ongoing legacies in the church. If only the church itself, the parishes, the pastors, would get the message.
Some do, some don't.
Few do, if I may be so bold. Few do.
Thank you.
Am I wrong? Am I wrong, Tom?
My best prayer is sitting down at the piano and playing the Psalms and singing the Psalms.
Yeah, but, you know, it may be my experience, but as I travel the country and go to different parishes, I just find that the music is sadly, sadly missing. It's either badly performed, not performed at all, or it's kind of all guitar music. And that's not to dismiss all guitar music. Some of it can be done very, very well and very, very touchingly. But, you know, we don't live in the 60s anymore. Doesn't anybody know that?
Well, I kind of represent a unique hybrid. I'm a convert to the faith. I came into the Catholic Church in about 1980, officially 1981. Well, I went to a parish where I liked the music, and it was definitely the post-Vatican II bouncy music, because I came from what I considered to be the stodgy Episcopal Church. But as my Catholicism has grown deeper, my music is evolving, and so I'll be on the piano this, you know, Friday for the Mary Mass, for the Assumption of Mary, and I'll have a cello player. I'll have a wonderful operatic cantor.
Don't tell me you're turning Episcopal again on us.
Well, it's funny. I just played at a funeral yesterday that was Episcopal.
They do have great music, boy, I'll tell you.
But
especially in England.
Don't you have to worry. I could never be an Episcopalian today. But that's a different story. I was talking to a priest up in Ames, Iowa, at the Iowa State University, and he was making the case that the Catholic Church has no shortage of programs, you know, of teaching you about the catechism or Bible,
right,
or, you know, whatever. But we need more stories to tell the stories of our faith like Jesus did. So that's why I do what I do.
That is so well said. And that's why when I launched my radio show, this radio show, back at the beginning of the year, I said, we're going to do cultural apologetics. That is, we're going to talk about the culture. We're going to talk about the stories that are being told there. We're going to listen to their stories. We're going to tell our own stories. We're going to find out where our stories meet, because where our stories meet is actually where we can start to get to know each other.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely. And it's one of the ways you can communicate with the kids.
I'm a philosopher by training. But the last thing I'm going to do when I meet someone who's asking me about the Catholic faith is try to approach them philosophically, unless that, of course, they ask for that. I'm going to approach them, finding out about them, their story, what brings them to ask. I want to find out what prompts the question before I hit them over the head with a book of catechetics.
I've been a Catholic for 33 years, and it's only in the last 5 years that I picked up the catechism. Now, every Wednesday morning, I'm in a group in a public coffee shop at 7 a.m., and we're plowing through the catechism.
It's a great book once you get around to reading it.
Book, and that's me at this point in my life. But what evangelization through entertainment will do is it'll get people, it reaches them through their heart. And it's a different way to communicate, and it's a way to get the kids there.
Well, you know, it's what the philosophers call knowledge by connaturality. That is, it's a knowledge that you get sort of through your senses, through intuition, and the encounter with beauty has in it a power of uniting us to the other transcendentals, which are the good and the true. And so you're really, what you're doing by presenting the beautiful is you are presenting another way to find your way to God. It's just another way. And it's the way that most people ignore.
It's absolutely.
What beauty is a way to God just as much as truth and goodness. But, you know, it's interesting about that you've chosen the wedding feast at Cana, because I believe it was Jesus' first miracle, correct?
Right.
And it is a miracle that he does reluctantly, and he does it sort of at the bequest of his mother.
Right.
But it also is wine, which, of course, a foretaste of his own passion, his own the Last Supper. I mean, wine, the wine that he creates, there's all kinds of theological overtones for him and for the story that is coming. And then you have the, you got to wonder what the stewards thought when they were asked to fill the urns with wine. I mean, I immediately thought of the groundlings in a Shakespeare play. You know, how he'll always have, you know, the groundlings stood at the bottom of the stage because they paid almost no money to get into the stage. But Shakespeare would always have some body, kind of crude scenes in his films, not films, sorry, in his plays to entertain the groundlings. And I imagine a scene where the stewards are kind of muttering to each other in the corner like, you know, these urns are heavy, you know, water's way over there. I mean, I got to walk all the way over the stream and get it, and people are going to be really upset. They don't want water, they want wine. And then their reaction when they realize what they're pouring, the glass is red.
Yeah. And you think about it, since this comes in the second chapter of the Gospel of John, and if this is in fact the first miracle, and I think in Scripture it is the first miracle, you wonder how much did the stewards know about Jesus? And, you know, so are they looking at this situation, is this guy nuts?
You got to assume they know nothing.
Yeah, I mean, you just imagine the awe when they saw what happened.
And just remember, there are stewards in many of Jesus' parables.
Yeah.
So you've got being a steward is kind of the theme in the Gospels.
That's a very good point.
You know, and I'm wondering, I'm sorry, you got my imagination going. When they come back to the present, and they're wearing their contemporary clothes, is it exactly the same setting that they left from, or has it been changed? Is it transformed or anything like that?
Well, that's a very good question, Deal, because my team is, you know, developing the staging on it now. And the way I'm working is I've hired a director who is just she's Catholic, and she's a top-notch theater person. And my musical director is a top-notch music guy in the Catholic Church, and he comes from more of an opera background. And, you know, my team is developing the creative look and staging of this. So it's going to be interesting
What if there was some wine when they came back? What if somehow wine appeared or something like that? So it appears like they brought something back, which directly connects the wedding feast at Cana to their transformation.
Well, I don't know if that would be what they would bring back. I got to think.
Not bring back. That's what they would be there as they arrive.
I see what you're saying.
Already be there. Well, I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud.
Yeah, well, let me plant this on you, because here's how we end it. We began with Hail Mary. They go back in time to Cana. They go through, you know, a number of things there. And then when they come back, the entire cast, minus Mary and Jesus, come back and they sing Hail Holy Queen.
And they're in contemporary clothes.
Yeah, so the costumes have been shed. They're back in contemporary clothes.
Is it a mass? Is the setting the mass?
Well, you know, you typically are. That's not the, at this point, that's not the thought.
Right.
But what do you think?
Well, if the setting is a mass, you could choreograph it so that they come back in, they sing that, and then a priest walks out offering the wine.
But you don't you're not saying the rosary in the middle of a mass.
True, that's right, you're not. That's the problem.
And so I don't know. If that's
that kind of clanks, I'm sorry. That
sandwich.
You're right. You don't want to confuse people,
yeah,
and you certainly don't want to stretch liturgical boundaries too much.
What I'm trying to do is to bring the second luminous mystery alive. And as people contemplate the Hail Mary and then they contemplate the second mystery, we want them to be to live it. You're right there.
I assume there's some sort of image of Mary there in the church.
Yeah, that's my intent, yes.
So maybe the lighting on that image changes dramatically or something. Or maybe the image itself changes.
Yeah.
You know, maybe the image transforms itself into something like what exactly they saw Mary to be when they would travel through time.
Mm-hmm.
We're just thinking here.
Yeah, and there's, you can see how fun this is.
Yeah.
To have this idea and to bring it alive. This is the creative process at its best when you get a good team around you. And this is where I've really made an effort to connect with a very creative team so that we can develop something that everything will be in place for other parishes who would like to, you know, develop this and perform it in the years to come.
I've got one more idea as we come toward the end of our conversation. I always love the end of Richard Strauss's opera, Der Rosenkavalier, when the young African-American boy comes out in full livery, sort of skipping across the stage and picks up the red rose that's been dropped there and then goes off the stage. That's the end of the opera. And I'm just wondering if when they enter the church and leave, there's somebody else there, say a janitor or something, who witnesses their disappearance and witnesses their reappearance. And the look on his face or hers might be an interesting way to end it.
That is an interesting idea.
Just a thought.
Yeah, it is. It's a good thought. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when you spend as much time doing the things we do, you know, the operas, the books, the films, and so forth, your head gets filled with all kinds of funny things.
Well, it does. And when you mention Richard Strauss, I laughed because I find his music largely inaccessible to me. And so, like when I listen to, I think it was Elektra.
Well, you don't listen to Elektra Salome. You go directly to the four last songs, 1949. And from there, you go directly to Der Rosenkavalier. Both Elektra and Salome were not typical of Rafalski's music at all.
Well, maybe that was...
Yeah, you start there. I got turned off by those, too, by the
way. I could not stand them.
Yeah.
And so back to your earlier question about the music, there's always a balance of how highbrow are you and how accessible. And my first piece I did 15 years ago was an operetta called We Need a Savior, and it was an Advent operetta. And I didn't limit myself, and it was... more, I hate to use the term sophisticated, but it was, more involved. And this follows the Wedding at Cana follows traditional song formats, typically with verses, refrains, sometimes.
I notice you're going to work Taste and See in there.
Yes, I've got Taste and See, the goodness of mm-hmm. the Lord, which frames the miracle. It's like I'm using that as a toast by the father of the bride. And he holds up the glass, his wine, as he's singing, Taste and See the Goodness of the Lord. And in the middle of this toast is when the drama occurs with the wine running out. And then when the miracle takes place and the audience gets wine, the father of the groom is now so impressed with the quality of the wine, he joins the father of the bride in completing the toast, Taste and See.
I hope, Tom, that you'll invite me out for the premiere in Des Moines, and I know it's going to be a great success. I've been talking to my friend and collaborator in pro-life effort, Tom Kleiner, about his musical theater piece, which will premiere on Valentine's Day, around Valentine's Day, Tom?
On Valentine's
Day next year.
Of a CC Catholic Church.
Yes. And again, one more time, your email?
Tom@bmi-info.com.
Tom Quiner, thank you for being my guest on Church and Culture.
Thank you, Dale, and I hope to see you on Valentine's
Day. I'll be there. And to all of you who are listening, please join me and my guests at the same time next week.
If you have any comments or questions about Church and Culture, you can contact Deal Hudson at dhudson@avemariaradio.net.
This program is made possible in part by CatholicBusinessPages.com, dedicated to helping grow businesses for a strong community of faith and Christian values. CatholicBusinessPages.com is your online directory resource for connecting you with businesses that have taken a strong stand to support those values that impact our lives. If Christian principles make a difference in your life, then CatholicBusinessPages.com will link you to business professionals who care about the values of our nation. CatholicBusinessPages.com, a great place to get connected.
This is Father Frank Pavone of Priests for Life. The debate in America about partial birth abortion did a lot to shift public opinion in a pro-life direction because it focused attention on what actually happens to the baby during an abortion, and what happens is not pleasant. That procedure was banned, but the D&E procedure is among those that remain legal. In a D&E, the baby, while alive, is dismembered limb from limb. Medical textbooks and sworn court testimony describe how the abortionist pulls off the arms and legs and crushes the head. Above and beyond any thoughts they have about abortion in the abstract, it's time to ask our fellow citizens what they think about D&E. Many who call themselves pro-choice nevertheless oppose this procedure. Find out more at priestsforlife.org. This is Father Frank Pavone on Ave Maria Radio.
In the Gospel of John, Jesus said, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." Following Jesus also means communicating as he would. That includes doing what is our responsibility without complaining. St. John Vianne said, "The man with impure speech is one whose lips are but an opening and a pipe which hell uses to vomit its impurities upon the earth." So the cursing, the lying, the manipulation, the rumors, those are all impurities we as Christians need to avoid. A regular prayer of mine goes like this. When I speak and when I write, I pray, "God, give me the words that you know others need to hear." In Romans, we are asked to pray, "Lord, speak to my heart that I may hear your word." So when you choose to follow Christ, remember, you're choosing to communicate as a Christian. This is a Christ-centered communication message. I'm Vanessa Denha-Garmo, the communication evangelist.
The Ave Maria Communications Guild invites you to activate your faith. All are invited to a day pilgrimage to historic Detroit churches Saturday, November 22nd. Pilgrims will visit Mother of God Chaldean Church, St. Augustine St. Monica Church, lunch at Sacred Heart Seminary, and attend a vigil mass with Archbishop Alan Dignaron. To reserve your place, call 313-565-8888, extension 179. St. Joseph's School in Lake Orion will be hosting a two-day juried craft show, holiday happenings, Saturday, November 22nd and Sunday, November 23rd. Admission is $2 and more than 100 vendors will be selling their wares. Raffles and door prizes will be awarded as well. For further details, call 248-980-5368. You can find many more events and enter your own events at our website, AveMariaRadio.net. To become a member of the Guild, call 877-288-1077. Catholic Radio, it's yours to keep.